I had a Red Bull on the way here, though. Yeah. I smashed it on the way here.
You smashed it?
Yeah, just drank fast. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't throw it on the ground or anything. So that's unusual for a person to completely smash a Red Bull.
Yeah. When I was lucky to work with you in studio now, you speak in kind of, oh, this part, this touches me.
Yeah.
It's kind of emotional.
The music.
Yeah, you were really emotional into it.
Yeah, I get emotionally invested into music. I feel, especially the project that, you know, you let me be a part of, I felt responsible for it in some way.
Mm.
And when an artist gives me that kind of responsibility, I feel like I have to give all of myself for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was quite the experience, but I found myself emotionally invested in it. And, you know, when he told me what the lyrics were about and what the song was about, I was like, oh, well, I can't screw this one up.
Yeah, but you said before you knew what it was about, you said, that was great. I will never forget that. I don't know what you sing about, but in a way, it touches me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Something emotional happens to me, and that's a
good sign. Is it the song about your father?
Yeah.
Oh.
You heard the early version.
Yeah, I heard the version.
He has done some great stuff.
Yeah, it's the thing I heard was wow.
It sounds like it's you know, it's getting better. And then I mixed it, and then which was, you know, one of the first for me. You know, again, I always mix my demos.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And that's the experience I have. But to mix something that's going to be released, that was the first for me. And then I'm, you know, learning a lot. So it's been quite the journey and an emotional.
You should do that more.
You've been producing your own demos for years and years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I of course have been in Los Angeles for some time before I moved to Norway.
Yeah.
And they were just demos, piano and vocal and, you know, what I think, you know, a type of drum beat would sound like. And then I go to the studio and with a producer and here's an idea that I have.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they'll say, oh, I like this part. And then the rest of the song is gone. And then we work on that and build from there. And so a lot of times it's 20% of the song is the original, what I came up with. And then sometimes 50, you know, so on and so forth. But in Los Angeles, I've worked with many producers and just learned and watched them and tried to figure it out. But when I moved to Norway, I didn't really know too many people in the industry. So I don't know any producers in Norway. You know, I don't know any recording engineers. I don't know any mixing engineers or mastering engineers. For the last couple singles, I've been sending my mix files and my mastering files to people in Los Angeles that I know.
Yeah.
So it's been...
And then in the first floor, there was Levi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was pretty interesting. That was a coincidence. All of a sudden, I got a message on Facebook, and it, you know, hello neighbor, you know, I'm an artist, a musician as well. I see that you're here, and come down and say hi if you'd like. Let's have a beer. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And so, I don't know. I told my girlfriend, and she's just like, yeah, but maybe that was just, you know, him being Norwegian.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe he doesn't mean it. Maybe he's.
I didn't seriously mean you to come down.
Yeah, he just maybe he just said hello.
Well,
but like
she saw that she's a Norwegian.
But yeah, she was worried that I if I went down, you'd be really surprised that I went down. But me being American, I was just like, well, to me, this is a fucking invitation. So let's do this.
Let me tell you something. I was because I was we did Norwegian lyrics.
Yeah.
For What Are Words? That's a huge song in our local.
Rogerud.
Yeah, that's a show. You heard that one.
Yeah.
And I'm always, you know me, Knut Anders. Knut Anders,
that's my name.
I used to have a lot of energy.
Yeah.
I used to be happy and hands in the air. But this Saturday, I was maybe I was tired or something. Mm. I just lay down on the couch, and it didn't ring on the doorbell. It was a doo doo doo, and that's not so often here in Oslo.
No, no, no.
And in suddenly I had Chris Medina in my living room.
With a
beer.
I brought a beer. Yeah.
Perfect.
I fell asleep for 1 minute, so I was a little bit dizzy in my head. Okay, this is my new neighbor.
Yeah. Pretty lucky.
With a worldwide song that I heard.
Yeah.
With 90 million streams or something.
It came out 1 year before Spotify.
Okay.
Ah. Wow.
So I always wondered how many streams it could have had.
Yeah.
If it had come out the year of Spotify, mm-hmm. or if Which Spotify came out a year before. It came out in 2011, and I think Spotify was starting to get big in the end of 2011, 2012. Mm-hmm. So What Are Words wasn't quite on Spotify yet. And then all of a sudden it was there. And getting lots of streams and getting played. And so now I think it has like 60, something like that. 65 million.
I'd love That's to, insane.
Yeah, I would love to have, that one song that has like almost 200 million.
Yeah.
It was, the year that it came out, it was the most popular.
Yeah.
The years after, it wasn't as popular, Mm-hmm. So I could only imagine what the first year would have been like.
Yeah.
When it was, reaching number one in different countries.
Mm.
That was lucky. So all that was lucky. So,
yeah.
I've been, I find that song really interesting because it's so out of, it introduced me to everybody.
Yeah.
To the world and introduced the world to me. But the funny thing is that song is so far from what I was doing before.
Okay.
So before I was in a punk rock band.
Punk rock?
Yeah. I was in a punk rock band.
A singer?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I wasn't a singer either.
Okay.
I wasn't. I was, before that, I was more of a screamer.
Okay.
Screamer?
A screamer, yeah. Like I never really tried to sing, like I never, tried to use my head voice, falsetto or any of that stuff. I never practiced. I never did any scales or anything like that. But I had somewhat of a music background. But I stopped practicing instruments when I joined a band.
Oh.
So I joined the punk rock band, and punk rock is less about trying to play good and more about trying to play with your feelings, and your aggression.
Mm.
And so, you don't sit and think about the songs you're writing. There's no formula. You just go, this is what I want to say.
Yeah. 2 minutes.
Let's put some music on it. What do I want to say now? There you go. But then, then American Idol came along and I was like, fuck, now I got to try to sing.
Yeah.
And so American Idol was the first time I had tried to actually sing to sing like a singer.
So what happened? Did you went on an audition? Did you stand in the line?
Yeah, yes. I stood in the line too. Yeah. All right. So I had done, when I was engaged to Juliana, my ex-fiance, the one that What Are Words is about. She was a huge American Idol fan, massive, and I wasn't really into it. But like most boyfriends, or girlfriends, when you're in a relationship, you're trying to, they want to watch something, so I find myself watching the Kardashians, or sometimes
communists,
Celia wants to watch, Farman or Vagan Vimotes, and I have no idea what they're saying, but I'm sitting there watching it.
Married for the First Time.
Whatever it is. What's that program where they're giving birth all the time? They're always giving birth.
Giving birth?
Yeah. It's like a program on Norwegian television where they show couples who are about to give birth.
I haven't seen it.
It doesn't matter. But I ended up watching American Idol a lot.
Oh.
A lot. And I was very critical of American Idol a lot. I wasn't really a big fan of it. Sometimes I'd make fun of all the people that she liked and go, I don't know why you like this guy. He sucks. But that was my whole punk rock kind of, like, I don't want to like this type of thing. And, you know, when she was in her accident, though, her life had changed dramatically. You know, I went from, I had turned my whole home, my entire home, a big house, into a studio. And that's where me and my guys would practice. And I was about to become an intern at a big studio in Chicago. So I was going to give all the big guys coffee and learn how to patch things and, you know, get the mics. I was going to be their, you know, slave so that eventually I could work at a studio.
Okay.
So that was the plan. And but after that, I ended up working full-time at Starbucks. I quit.
Okay.
Yeah. And I quit music altogether because I had to take care of Juliana.
Yeah.
And so for about a year and a half, I would take her to therapy and rehab in the mornings, and then I'd go to work at night. And I had no time for music. And so there was a moment in my life where I was just like really pissed off at the whole situation and super angry with God and just like super mad that I was in this situation to begin with. And so I remember cursing, you know, God out, you know, like really, you motherfucker. So how could you, you know, like I was just so upset. I was basically saying, how could you do this? You know, how could you let this happen? And why would you put me in this situation where, you know, if I stay, I'm, you know, and continue this way, I'm so unfulfilled and unhappy, you know, and you know, the most important thing to me was music and this woman, and now I had neither. So I felt like I was having a giant pity party. Like I was having like a huge like feeling sorry for myself and in that moment. And so I basically was at work one day, and a promoter sent an email to all his favorite singers, and he said, hey, there's an American Idol tryout in Milwaukee, you know. And I'm just letting you guys know, you guys are my favorite singers, so do what you want with that information.
It was like an email list.
Yeah, he just copied this information and sent it to all these singers that, that he enjoyed.
So he had heard you in a punk band.
He was he used to book punk bands and promote punk bands, and you know, he was, there was a scene, and he was just always the guy, one of the guys that you would go to. And so basically I didn't think much of it. I was like, there's no way I have any time for this shit. And so I continued on with my days. You know, I came home tired one day from work, and Juliana's mother was watching American Idol. And the way that it was there, you know, you have a living room, and there in the living room is, you know, where the family's sitting watching American Idol. And right next to the couch was Juliana's hospital bed. So she was in the room too. And so I had come home, and I was going to give her some medicine and some applesauce. Because we were trying to teach her how to swallow. And so her mother goes, I don't really like American Idol this year. You know, what I don't know what it is. What do you think? And I was just like, honestly, I'm like, I hate that fucking show. And I really don't give a shit. And her mother was really, really irritated with my attitude. And so she turned it off, and she was on her way upstairs to go to sleep. And she said, you know, Chris, this accident, it happened to us all. Not just you. And so I was just really feeling shitty and tired. And I said, I'll just go to sleep. I don't want to deal with this. But then I noticed Juliana, she was like pointing. And she was, you know, trying to say something and trying to move, you know. at the time she wasn't able to speak at all. And so I was trying to figure out what she was saying. And so we got this board and I had to like put a little bit of pressure on her wrist so she could move it straight. Otherwise she was like this.
Mm. Yeah.
So I had to put some pressure on her wrist.
Yeah.
And she wrote, if you were on.
Yeah.
And it took like 20 minutes to figure that out. And I said, I don't know what you're saying. Mm. I don't, you were on, what does that mean if you were on? And she was trying to tell me, and I'm like, look, I'm so tired. We'll just talk about this in the morning. So I turned off the light, even though she was still trying to say something. I just turned off the light and I laid on the couch next to her hospital bed and I decided to go to sleep. And somehow right before I went to sleep, like that in between dream, you know, like when you're about to have a dream and when you're about, it hit me. If you know, her mom was talking about, I don't like American Idol this year. What do you think? And it was like being hit in the face. You know? So I woke up and I turned on the light and I woke her up and I said, were you talking about if I was on American Idol?
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah. And I was like, I was just like, you bitch. you know, and the reason why I thought that was because she had forced me right before she had gotten into her accident. She had forced me to try out for American Idol once before. And she said, we're about to get married and life is about to change. We're probably going to have kids.
Mm. Yeah.
So you should try out for the show. And I said, hell no. And she said, all right, but when we get married, I don't want to hear you once say that, you know, you didn't make it or you couldn't do it because we got married. So this is just an opportunity. Mm. You should take it. And so I said, okay, fine, I'll do it.
Mm.
And she was so mad at me because I didn't take it seriously. Mm. I really just dressed like a bum and looked like a jerk. And I showed up late, didn't get there early, and just went there and sang whatever. And they said no, obviously. And I wasn't really sad about it. But she was so mad. Mm. And we got into a huge argument about it. And she was so disappointed. And she said, well, one day you should try again. And I said, no. I'm never going to try out for that show again.
Oh.
And so now she's trying to tell me, if you were on, it would have been good.
Yeah.
And I was like, you bitch, because here we are and we're in this crazy situation and you don't, after she woke up, you know, you don't remember, she doesn't remember like who people are. Mm-hmm. She doesn't, you know, remember certain things of the past. But she does remember that I fucked up the American Idol competition. And so I said, I can't wait to tell your mom this. So the next morning, her mom woke up. I told her about it. She goes, that's not a bad idea. You should try out for that show, Chris. Yeah. And I go, that's funny that you say that because someone just sent me an email.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I went and I tried out. And long story short, which is, I can tell it's quite a long story.
This is a playful long story.
And I tried out. Everything went really well. And I got eliminated from the show before they started to do the live.
Mm.
So I was embarrassed to go home. So I was like, I'm just going to stay in Los Angeles until people find out. Until that episode airs. Yeah. And then I'll come back because I don't want anyone asking me questions.
Okay.
And so I'm waiting. And then I get a call from one of the record labels. And they said, this guy, Rodney Jerkins, he wants to meet you. He has a song that he wants you to hear.
Okay.
And so I went in and there was What Are Words. And I walked into the studio and I said, I listened to it. And I said, you know, I don't really like it.
Okay. Okay.
And he goes, really? And I go, yeah, I don't really like it. I go, it seems like it's a really great song, but I'm like, it's not my style. Like I sing more, you know,
rock,
harder stuff,
punk,
punk rock music, like pop music, Green Day or Rancid or something like that. And he goes, yeah. But you know, he's like, these are your words. He's like, these are all the words that you said in an interview and all your interviews. So like, he's like, we put a lot of time into this. You should just give it a shot because I think it'd be really great for your voice. And I said, I said, oh, I don't, but doesn't it seem like it's a little bit too high?
Okay. You know?
And I'm like, and I'm not really that great of a singer. And he's like, just go in and let's give it a shot. And so I went into the booth and I'm super excited to be giving it a shot. I'm in the same studio that Michael Jackson recorded in.
So which studio was that?
It was in Los Angeles. So I forgot the name of it, but it was.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It'll dawn on me somewhere. But Ronnie Jerkins was the producer. And so there I am, and I'm trying to get it. And I could see that the producer is just really disappointed.
Okay. You know?
And so he goes into the booth, and he goes, how you feeling? I go, I'm feeling really, really good. I'm like, I'm going to get it. My voice has to warm up.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, but you seem really excited. I go, yeah, man, this is cool. Look at the studio. It's so beautiful. Mm. And, you know, how could I not be excited? He goes, yeah, of course. He's like, I get that. Mm. He goes, but I don't think you get it.
Okay.
And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, you're smiling. Yeah. And I go, yeah. And he goes, how are you supposed to convince the world that you mean what you're saying when you're smiling? And he's like, and you got a girl who's in a hospital bed.
Yeah.
And her life's never going to be the same. And she's afraid that life is never going to be the same. And you're trying to sing this to her, but you're smiling. How are you going to convince anybody?
Yeah. Wow.
And it knocked all the wind out of me. And I got so embarrassed.
Mm.
And I started to cry. Wow. I started to cry. And he's like, now I want you to sing it. Mm. He's like, I want you to sing it with tears in your eyes. Wow. He's like, he goes, I forgot what the guy's name was, but the engineer, he goes, yo, play it from the second hook. He goes, now I want you to sing it like she's in a coma and you're trying to wake her up.
Hmm.
Like you're trying to wake her up. And so the second hook was two takes. That's all it was.
Hmm.
And it's me screaming and crying. And so that song is going to be really hard to beat.
Yeah.
One, because that's about as punk rock as I ever gotten, was to sing from deep within my heart.
Mm.
And the funny thing was I remember cursing out God, like I said.
Yeah.
And saying, how could you take this all away from me? You know, how am I supposed to take care of this girl?
Mm.
And, you know, and still do music. And then all of a sudden, this whole thing happened, and I got this song, and I found out that 90%, it wasn't even my total choice.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to give my percent, but the record label gave all the percentage to her.
Mm. Wow.
So that song became number one in many different parts of the world, and it gave me an opportunity to do music again, and it gave me an opportunity to take care of the person that I love.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Julian and I, we laugh about it. We're still very, very close. And she's taken care of for the rest of her life. It's in all the money went into this trust. And so it's kind of a funny thing where I became this singer who sings from his heart because now I don't know how else to do it now. I look back at that punk rock guy, that guy was just pretending.
Yeah.
And now I'm singing love songs and pop songs.
And you love it.
And singing,
you have that pop heart?
Singing from here.
But you said that was the most punk rock you've ever been.
That was the most.
When you were crying your feelings out.
Yeah.
That's punk rock.
Yeah. In a strange way, I was saying all the things that I truly, truly want to say without apology, and doing it even though people that I know are saying, why are you writing songs like this? This isn't you. And I'm just like, I didn't know that it was, but it is.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I really, really want to do. And no matter what anyone says, this is what I want to do. And so I kind of became a singer because of What Are Words. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't a singer before that. So I'm not like, even now I'm learning how to sing every single, like every single time I write a song, I go, oh, that's something I didn't know how to do before.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I, you know, I always look at some great singers, like you're a great singer, you know, Adam Douglas, great singer. And the, to me, you guys are real singers, right? Mm-hmm. But me, I'm just like trying to get by, trying to learn along the way. And so I've never been much of a singer until recently, until What Are Words.
Really strong.
But those guys, did they, I mean, how did they know? Did they do the research out of an interview?
Yeah, so basically, while I was on American Idol, they interviewed me several times. So I had about 6 interviews during American Idol. Mm. One really big one at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Where they did my profile and they talked about my story. Mm. And then this guy, Rodney, he was so touched and moved by my story. And then he saw, wow, this guy's getting, he's going viral.
Mm.
He's like,
ah, that interview, went viral.
Okay. Yeah. And so he's just like, huh. He's like, I want to do something for him. Mm. And so he started writing, he started getting all the interviews to do research on me. Mm-hmm. And then he brought a songwriter in by the name of Lauren Christie, who has become my mentor. She's like my best friend now in Los Angeles. Huh. And she actually co-wrote a song with me called Cut Me, which is out on Spotify.
That's maybe my favorite.
Yeah. And it's funny, the 2 songs that I've written with her are the ones that have the most streams.
Wow.
That's something. So she's really, really, really gifted with lyrics and melody. Mm. And so he brought her in and said, I want you to watch this and I want you to write lyrics. I like what he says here. I like what he says here. I like what he says here. And so she just took those notes down and almost every single line was something close to what I said.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I even call her Angel. That was her nickname before her accident. Yeah. What's up, Angel? Wow. All the time. Angel.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So I'm forever keeping my Angel close. That was something in the interview. What kind of guy would I be if I walked out when she needed me the most?
You know. And I know this is true because I invited you to play with me at Lillehammer.
Yeah.
We had a little event gig and you Skyped
her.
So I just said hello.
Yeah.
For me, that was really, you talked to her almost every day or?
Yeah.
So how is she today?
She's good. She speaks.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She speaks now. She types. Mm. And so she does all the, you know, when she wakes up in the morning, she has to do the taking care of herself, go to the toilet, brush her teeth, take a shower. She could do those things, but she needs help getting there. She can't walk by herself. She needs to hold on to something, or she needs help. She can't make her own food, but she could eat whatever we make her. So she needs assistance, and she'll probably need assistance for the rest of her life. But she's gotten so much better. And one of the things that I'm, you know, she does get sad that, you know, her life has changed. She does get sad that, you know, we're no longer together. Mm. Like she does feel those things, but she was she's very clear up here. Mm-hmm. And she was very clear after 6 years of taking care of her. She was clear that she wanted me to stop and she wanted me to move on.
Yeah.
And so
So that's something she told you.
Yeah, it was something that I was struggling with for about 2 years. There was about 2 years where I already knew that I wanted to be in this anymore. But I didn't know how to live with myself. I felt so guilty. Like maybe,
of course,
like survivor's guilt, maybe.
Yeah.
Where you're just kind of like, I don't see how I could go on and live a normal, happy life while she's stuck here, you know, like trying to, you know, keep cereal on a spoon without dropping it. And so I kind of felt really guilty for so long and just didn't realize until after we had split up that that was what was going on. That's what I was struggling with. But when I told her parents that Juliana, you know, said this, they were like, we've been wanting to have a talk with you. We think you should do that too.
Okay.
You know, we think that you've, you know, you've done enough. And we think that it's not only healthy for her, but healthy for you if there's a clear line about what your relationship is.
Yeah.
And so the funny thing is after we had split up, I started to treat her even better.
Oh,
because I was almost treating her like not as a boyfriend or a fiance. I was treating her like someone I was taking care of.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was like a job. But as soon as I didn't have that responsibility, I realized, oh, I want to be there.
Yeah.
I want to talk to her, and I want to, you know, see how she's doing, and I love the family. So
it's not a job, and it's a friend.
No, it was just more like whenever I want, and so it became so much more like loving.
Yeah.
So we became close, but I really, I really struggled with that shit for a long time, everything suffered because of it. You know, right after her accident, I must have gained about 80 pounds. I was pretty heavy in the beginning of my career because I was eating all the time.
Unhappy.
Yeah, unhappy eating for sure. Also just, you know, waking up, going to therapy, eating, going to work, eating, come home, eat whatever's in the fridge, wake up, and did that for about a year and a half before What Are Words came out. So I gained so much weight. And then the 2 years that before Julianne and I broke up, I was drinking a lot. Experimenting with a lot of different, you know, drugs and drinking a lot. And so I stopped writing music too for a couple of years because I didn't want to get interviewed anymore.
Okay.
Every time I released a song, even if it had nothing to do with Juliana, everyone,
you were insecure about something?
Everyone around the world just kept asking me, does this have anything to do about Julia? How is Juliana? Are you going to marry Juliana? Where is Juliana? How is Juliana? And it just, I was like, people don't give a shit about my music. They don't care. And so I was like, they just want to know. I've become a tabloid. I might as well, I mean, be on Dagbladet or whatever, Say or Heard or whatever it is, you know, doing all those reality TV show shit, you know, because that's what my life and my career has become, is about her.
Personal tragedy became reality show.
Exactly. That's what people wanted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I could see it even in my social media, you know, like whenever I would take a picture of, you know, or post about music, there was just a handful of people that really enjoyed it. But if I were to post a picture or talk about Juliana, there'd be thousands and thousands of people who would like it. And I would just go, okay, I know what's going on here.
Can you talk about that? You told me something a couple of days ago.
Yeah, social
media.
That's
exciting because you can sing on DirecTV for thousands worldwide, for example.
Yeah.
And if someone told you to post a picture, tonight I'm going to play at blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You hate it.
Yeah, yeah. I cannot do it. Just the...
Promo?
Promo. Fucking hate it, man. Maybe that's why my social media numbers are down. The only time I'll do a promo is when I really am behind something.
Yeah.
Or if I feel like it's a really, really big deal. Like when I was on MGP, I felt like, okay, this is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And so I want people to know about it. When I was on Ohundrit Stemme, which was the ripoff of
the TV2 version,
which I enjoyed, I talked about it a lot. When my singles come out, I talk about it a lot. But I, you know, I have a show here.
Yeah.
I don't really think that that's that important. I have a concert here or somewhere. I feel just the physical act of holding a phone like this away from my face and pressing record somehow and trying to, and then acting really excited, it makes me feel so stupid. And so I know forced,
Yeah.
And so I forced myself to do this shit. I can't do it. I really.
But your wife is really, is pretty good at that stuff.
Oh God, she works with that. She hates me because
she wants you to do that.
She's so embarrassed because she works for marketing.
Oh yeah.
And not only marketing, but her main thing in marketing is to work with social media, Facebook, yeah. social media.
Celia, you are doing a great job.
Yeah. So,
but,
yeah.
Is it? Would she say that it's working? Does it have?
She said
an impact to do those kind of videos.
Well, she said this. She goes, I want you to try something out. She goes, I want you to post for 2 weeks straight.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, just post something that, and she gave me specific rules. Don't just post your breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Don't post this. Like, post something that has to do with you. Yeah. And don't worry about the quality of the picture. Don't worry about anything. Just take a picture you like and say something that has something to do with you. And do it during these times.
Like what?
Like yeah, for example, if I want to post a picture of, you know, me on the balcony mm-hmm. or on the terrace, only do it if I'm really happy about being on the terrace. Mm. Not because I think it'll be a good picture.
Okay.
But because I genuinely
like
the fucking terrace. And why do I like the terrace? Say...
You said terrorist?
Terrace.
No, well, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Did you say terrorist?
Yeah, terrorist. Just kidding.
So, you know, I'm enjoying the sun.
Yeah.
And it's so peaceful on the terrace. Mm. And take a picture and boom, that's what it is. You know, like if you're in the studio, a lot of musicians feel like here's another studio picture.
Yeah.
And so they feel kind of like, you know, they want to take a picture of them in the studio because they feel, if you feel like I should.
I'm doing mm-hmm. something.
But like a great thing would be like taking a picture about doing, I should have.
Yeah.
Mixing and producing Papa.
Mm.
Because I actually... put a lot of effort and joy into that project. And I got so much out of doing that project. Mm. And I talked about it every day when I woke up and went to sleep. So that picture would be different from every other studio picture because
it had a meaning.
Wow.
There's something behind it. So she's like, I want you to do that for 2 weeks straight. And I want you to pay attention to the reaction, to your reach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just want you to pay attention. And then
what happened?
This is great stuff.
Of course it worked. It worked. Like all of a sudden you saw drastically, first picture, boom, second picture, more likes, more comments, so on and so forth, more shares, more. Mm. And then after 2 weeks it was there. But of course, because I'm so bad at it, you know, I dropped off and I stopped. Mm-hmm. But I saw that it worked. So it's there. And it only works when your heart is behind it. Mm. I always wonder, you know, how do these fitness people get 2 million streams, like 2 million viewer followers?
Mm.
It's because they really have a heart and passion for fitness.
Yeah, because that's I see many artists that basically only post pictures of themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I mean, I have the same feeling.
Yeah, and I think
you explain with actually the physical movement,
holding
the camera,
and it's
posing for a picture of myself for social media. I have a social media identity crisis.
I actually
anxiety.
That's what it is. Mm. It's anxiety for sure, because every day you are thinking about something that
That's important for you.
And it shows who you are.
Yeah. Mm.
And so if you're walking, if you're the type of person walking around, you know, loving the nature, like if you're taking a walk and you're going, man, this is so beautiful. That's the moment to take a picture and go, I am so, so happy and lucky that I get to be in this environment.
Yeah.
You know, have a blessed day. People will be like, I like that. He meant that shit.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, walking. You know, like,
yeah.
Just like, who gives a fuck? You're walking.
But if I my Facebook wall or Insta feed would be like
just pictures of your face.
No pictures on my face. The weed studio, the Space Echo.
Yeah.
Straight from restoration.
Yeah, I mean, I love my old passion. Piano.
Yeah, or scanning old slides.
Yeah.
So how should we write it if we this imagine the situation?
Look at my monkey lamp.
Yeah, or we're here, Chris.
Do you like my monkey lamp?
We talk about important stuff. Mm-hmm. Would that be a great thing? We talk about things. I just imagine a post. Mm-hmm. What would be the perfect post for here today?
Well, I would say, you know,
we find a nice nub.
Making podcasts with the best guy.
Yeah.
In the whole world. I don't know the answer to that question. No, I think it's like, I don't know, it'd have to come to you.
People want it personal.
Yeah, people kind of want it genuine, you know.
Do you actually crack the code when you still don't do it?
I'm sorry?
You crack the code, social media code, but you still don't do it.
I've cracked the code, but I just...
You still don't do it.
I can't bring myself to do it because because the code, knowing the formula, I know how to lose weight too. You know, I know how to work out and lose weight. Well, you don't see me doing that shit every day either. You know, like, it's kind of like you also have to have a passion for social media.
Mm. Yeah,
that's part of the deal.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah, and you kind of have to be, you have to know that it's important.
Mm.
And so it's like a relationship. You have to develop a relationship with social media for it to be successful.
Yeah. So for you, if you post a post and then you get 911 comments or 28 that don't bother you that much, or do you get... Oh, I only have 28 comments here.
I don't think about it anymore because I don't post anymore.
No.
But when I did post a lot, I did pay attention to that quite a bit.
Okay.
Like I found myself posting a picture and then over the course of 8 hours, I'd see myself like, only 10 comments. You know, like
this didn't work out
well. This one's not going.
This was a success.
Yeah, wow. I don't feel the momentum on this one. You know, like, so it's kind of like, you know what I mean? Like you post something, you just go, oh, fuck, that was bad. That was bad. Yeah. What was bad about that?
But did you ever delete something because it didn't have enough comments?
No, I've never done that.
Never?
I've done it.
I've just dealt with it.
This didn't work.
No, I seriously have a bunch of posts that have like, you know, 900, 1,000 likes, 2,000 likes, blah, 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 and then all of a sudden, 100 likes.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, fuck it. Just leave it there.
Yeah.
So I just kind of like, but I mean, I don't know. That could just be me thinking like those 100 people will know that I deleted it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
is a lot of people.
I don't think they would.
No, nope. They wouldn't notice.
No, but I think that's where my brain is like.
We have a guitar here.
Yeah.
You have a guitar?
He told me that we could do a song, and I said, "Yeah, sure." You know,
all right.
I don't.
Are you up for it?
Yeah, I'm up for it. Mm-hmm. I don't really. Is it a jam or is it?
No,
more like,
you have. If you want,
whatever
sing your favorite tune.
Yeah, I'll do "Cut Me."
Since you like it so much. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
So
and I can find a guitar.
So
may I wash my hands?
Yeah, it's a bathroom in there. It's kind of overfilled the trash bin.
All right, here we go. You could throw your roses, you could throw your stones. You could kick the feet out from the pedestal. I'm not afraid to say that, even in the darkest part of me.
There's still a light that shines down every step along the way. Cut me and I'll bleed. Cut me and I'll bleed. I'll get over it. I'll get over it. Cut me and I'll bleed. Dreamt I was a pilot, I could fly a plane. The clouds were all around, I couldn't see a thing. Then something came to save me, show me where I was and put me down gently on the ground. That dream has never gone away. Cut me and I'll bleed. Cut me and I'll bleed. I'll get over it. I'll get over it. I'll cut me and I'll bleed. Ooh. Afraid to say that even in the darkest part of me, there's still a light that shines down every step along the way. Cut me and I'll bleed. Cut me and I'll bleed. I'll get over it, I'll get over it. Cut me and I'll bleed.
After the punk rock period,
yeah,
and crazy stuff was going on, Idol, what happened to you?
After...
When things were taking off.
When things were taking off.
What happened to you? Inside your mind.
I was so overwhelmed,
mm.
You know. Now I look back at it. For example, I got invited to do a lot of things, but something that you guys would totally know about and can maybe relate to is Vegalista.
Yeah.
So I was invited to perform at the Vegalista. And I didn't know shit about the Vegalista. Zero. Mm. I didn't know anything about it. Didn't do any research on it. Nothing. I even asked to get paid.
Okay.
When now that I've been living here and now that I've been coming here, I know that a lot of people don't get paid to do Vegalista. They go and they do it because it's a great opportunity, promo. And also because it's just historically, you don't do it. It's a free festival. So it's not like they're making tons of money from ticket sales or something like that. So, and so I asked to get paid, and I said, "Yeah, but is there money involved?" And they said, "Well, we could give you maybe like some cash to stay in Norway." And I said, "That's fine." And so they gave me like a per diem, so that I could stay the extra week.
Mm.
That I was here in Norway to play this concert. At the time, I thought it was just a concert. And I played. I walk out on stage. Well, before I walked out on stage, I was backstage getting makeup. And I said, why are you doing, like, why do we have to do makeup? And they go, because this is for TV. And I go, oh, this is going to be on television. They go, yeah, this is like a big TV show, like a big festival. And I'm like, really? I'm like, how many people are here? They're like, maybe like 80,000, 100,000 people maybe. And I'm like, you're fucking kidding me. And then my heart dropped because I was like,
Even if you're an American, your heart drops.
Yeah, because What Are Words was still only a month old.
Mm.
And it didn't really hit that big in the United States. Okay. The first country that it hit big in was Norway. That was the first one.
Okay.
So when I got here, the 2 weeks before, I had just played a concert for 400 people.
Oh.
That was maybe the biggest crowd I had played for before I had come to Norway. Then I went and played for a small festival in Nutodden.
Blues festival.
Yeah, it was like called the Schools Out Festival.
Okay.
Yeah. Small kind of festival, but there was like 2,000 people there. And I was like, now this is the biggest crowd I've ever played in front of. A week and a half later, then it was the Veglista. And I walked out on stage, and if you go and look at that YouTube video.
Yeah.
My eyes are wide open because I'm like, and like you could tell that I am so inexperienced as a performer on that day because I seriously was just like surprised. We had no idea. Even my band, we were just like, what the hell is this? And they said my name, da 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 da. Chris Medina, and then to hear that, I was just like, oh my god. I had earplugs in,
yeah,
and I could still hear the crowd.
Yeah.
And my in-ear came out and got stuck in my big ass hair. And so you could see me on stage trying to like push it back in and try that was crazy. I went backstage and they interviewed me. How do you feel? And I started to cry.
Oh.
Because I had never done that before.
Oh.
And I think that now looking back at it, it's a very sweet moment. But Vegalista isn't, you know, like artists play Vegalista and they go, yeah, I played Vegalista.
Yeah.
That's it. I played Vegalista. Lots of artists, big ones, not so big ones, they play it and then that's it. And they play festivals all the time. But I had never done it before.
That was your first.
That was my first festival and my first like, wow, this song is big here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because everybody was singing the words right back to me.
Wow.
You know, the whole crowd. And so that was like the biggest moment of my life. Later on, I had gone and I, you know, it became number one in Sweden. I went and played for, I think, 60,000 people there. It became number one in Singapore. Played for 20,000 people there. Then I started playing everywhere.
Yeah. You know, and you toured Denmark, in the United States for many years?
Toured in the United States, played for thousands and thousands of people there. Never played for a big festival like 20,000 people or anything in the United States. But that was the big wow moment. Was just like, wow, this is a popular song.
Yeah.
And then when it started becoming number one in different countries and I started going there, I was just blown away, you know, blown away by the treatment and and just like the recognition. You know, I had never had so many people recognize me, and it wasn't just recognizing me. It was like losing their minds, recognizing, you know, which is if you're a Norwegian artist, that's really big. You don't feel that when you're in Norway. Because people in Norway kind of go, oh, that's that person. And they just don't really, you know, freak out over, you know, that artist.
Then you have to be Marcus and Martinez.
Yeah, maybe. But I think that if you're like someone from the States.
Yeah.
And you're big and then you come to Norway, then I think that the feeling that this is the only time.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a chance. So they kind of feel like, oh shit, now I have to. So I think that's why. Now that I live here, you know, I could have a whole conversation with a group of people before someone says, "Are you Chris Medina?" Mm. Yes. Oh, well, how do you like living in Norway? It's like, yeah. Oh, it's nice. And then that's it. You know, there's nothing to it, you know. But back then it was just like,
so how do you like living in Norway?
Yeah. But how was it for you after the Stjernekamp? I'm just curious now.
Well, it's like,
did you have to write autographs all the time?
No, but I've done my share of selfies.
Yeah.
Just a modern autograph.
Yeah, yeah. It's the modern proof.
Yeah. It's actually, I think it's about people want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Have a piece of a conversation, feel that they know you, have met you.
Yeah.
So the selfie or the autograph back in the days was a kind of an icebreaker or just an excuse to talk to you.
Yeah.
And
also just to have that proof. Just to have that, like, look at this. Yeah.
Put on social media. Yeah.
And the picture was like something you would frame. Now it's like something you have in the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With all the other artists that you've taken pictures with. Because it's so, there's so many now.
Yeah.
I invited you to the my local thing, Viken Tour.
Yeah.
You seems like maybe sometimes to be a little bit introvert. You don't, you're quiet and you're a humble guy. But then you knew the importance of saying hello to people.
Yeah.
That was a really positive experience for me.
Yeah.
You talk to everyone. Mm-hmm. And people from my home village, they like you so much.
That's good to hear. Yeah. That's good to hear. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the American in me, but at the same time, I think it has something to do with, you know, my dad.
Yeah, okay.
You know, actually, you know, I never thought my mom was that way, but now that I'm older, I realize she also is a very, very social person. Mm. And so my dad and my mom, they both talk to, you know, everybody. They're like the life of the party. They're very loud people and things like that. But I've never been the extremely loud one, but I'm not shy.
No, you're not.
And so I like to talk to, if someone says, you know, hello, I stop and say, hello, how are you? What's your name?
Yeah.
You know, like, thank you for coming. You know, do you come here often? Like, I ask them questions.
Yeah.
You're just like, like, what is this? And so I take a little bit of time because I know that those people are going to be seeing the show.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I also know that if I was at a show and I saw an artist and they stopped and talked to me, that show would be even more special.
Magic. Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, like you said, you get a piece of that person and they give it to you. You know, I went and saw the first song that I sang on American Idol. My audition was a song called Break Even, and it was by The Script, the band. The Script. And basically, I had done it and it went viral. And they invited me to their concert when they were in Chicago.
The Script?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I went to the concert and was sitting there waiting and, you know, watching the show and everything. And just because they invited me, that show still is one of my favorite concerts ever. It made it even more special when they invited me backstage after the show to have a chat with me and talk with me and say thank you for singing our song. And I hung out with them for about an hour and it was really, really special.
Do you ever feel that you give away a piece of yourself? Does it wear you out? Do you get tired from it?
Yeah, I do sometimes. I do feel like I say yes to too many things and I say, I feel like I let myself, I don't want to say being taken advantage of, but sometimes it feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only sometimes.
Mm.
Like most of the time, I get an incredible joy of their reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when I take the time
neutral of it?
Yeah. And I say hello to somebody that really wants to say hello to me.
Mm.
And I give them more than just a hi.
Yeah. You know?
or you know, or a wave. Mm. When I stop for just a second,
yeah,
and say, you know, 2 minutes. How's yeah. it going? You know, mm. you know. Well, enjoy yourself.
Mm.
Have a good day. Things mm. like that. I feel like their reaction to it, in their eyes, in their expression, mm. I get probably more out of it. Like if I only give 2 minutes, mm. I get a couple hours of joy thinking yeah, about yeah. that. Yeah. You know, maybe even a day of joy just thinking about it. I even go home and tell my girlfriend, like, oh, somebody today,
yeah,
I gave somebody a hug today.
Yes.
Believe it or not.
And those people yeah. might remember it for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Because you are yeah. a front man.
Yeah, in some way.
And when I was playing with you at Lillehammer, I said, I remember this. I told you, Chris, for me, it's so natural to have just 1 minute, have a little prayer before the gig. What do you think about that? And then you started to pray, dear God,
yeah.
bless this night. Let's have a great evening. Amen.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That was the most natural in the world for you.
Oh, yeah.
What's
yeah.
your background?
I was born a Catholic,
mm-hmm.
and I went to Catholic school. And I enjoyed the school, but I hated the ritual.
Mm.
I hated going to church every morning and praying and the whole like genuflecting and going in and
genuflecting.
Going, yeah, like basically when you walk into church, you have to like yeah, kneel
yeah.
and
yeah.
like that kind of like you know that whole thing. And so I hated it.
Yeah.
And there was a point in college where I was just like, I don't know what I really believe or what I don't, because I hated the experience of Catholic school. But I had such a relationship with the idea of an afterlife.
Mm.
Someone invited me to a Christian church.
Mm.
And I went in and I heard the music and I listened to the person talking and I was just like, this feels so right to me.
Mm.
It feels like this is what I've been missing. Mm. And then I just had this new relationship with God and with Christianity. And so I wasn't really like a hardcore Christian until What Are Words happened, because What Are Words was, I really believe in my heart that What Are Words happened because of that moment in the car when I was hitting the steering wheel and screaming at God and saying, fuck you for doing this, you know, because I believe that when you are at your most vulnerable and you say to God directly what's in here, then he takes a moment to answer it. And it took a whole year and a half for What Are Words to come out, but when it finally did, I realized that every single step along the way was just had nothing to do with me. You know, it wasn't even written by me. It was just words that I said in an interview, just things that happened to me.
Yeah.
For example, the Juliana story, that had nothing. There was no plan to even tell them about it. It just kind of came up because you're supposed to write, what's your job? I'm a barista and I'm a caretaker. And that's what I was. Oh, you're a caretaker. Who do you take care of? Oh, I take care of my fiance. Oh, tell me more about that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So also, I didn't bring her to the audition. That was a surprise by her family. Her family brought her. And so there she was all of a sudden, like at this audition. I was like, oh. And so there was no plan for them to even see her. And, you know, this whole experience, the song, it becoming number one, I didn't, you know, promote it. I didn't have a social media back then. I didn't have anything. So it just happened. And I feel like my prayer was answered. So at that moment when What Are Words became a worldwide hit is when I kind of felt like, wow, not only did my, you know, not only did I ask for it, but it came true, exactly true.
And
I didn't even wish for it. I was just asking for help.
Yeah.
And so I have like, you know, I always had a relationship with God, but when What Are Words came out, that's when I was like, yeah, me and Jesus are like this.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.